Football Weekly Extra from The Guardian in association with sportingbet.com.
Football Weekly Extra. Going where ordinary football weeklies cannot reach. In today's bulletin, littered with dead rubbers like Dwight York's bedroom floor on a Sunday morning, that was the midweek qualifiers. We round up today all the matches that battered, and England-Belarus, and we get the reaction from Buenos Aires as Argentina goes through to the World Cup after all. The pod asks, if this is a weight off Maradona's mind, wait till he takes off those earrings. Meanwhile, as the all-clear sounds on those internationals and brave lads troop home from all corners of the globe, awaiting them is a sizzling set of domestic fixtures. Aston Villa-Chelsea, Harry Redknapp's return to Portsmouth, and Cotton Mill Derby. We'll have previews of that and more, along with your post, Dr. Sid in Spain, the latest from Italy, and a little bit on Sven and that North Korea business in today's Football Weekly Extra. Well, hello there, everybody, and welcome to the pod today, Kevin McCarrow.
Hi, James.
Hi, Kevin. Lovely to see you.
Thank you.
You've been off sequestered on England duty, excitingly enough.
Yes, but the door's been unlocked and I've been released now. It's good.
Ah, you wear the look of a relieved man, as does Barry Glendening.
Hello.
Hi, Barry. You've been up late, haven't you?
I have, yeah.
Yeah. Argentina, Uruguay. Uruguay, Argentina, of course.
Yes, indeed.
One of the midweek highlights, of course. And does Sean Ingle, the shadowy mastermind, etc.
Hi, James.
All right. Who put Barry onto that late night stint? The graveyard shift.
We had 130,000 people have read that. It's far more popular than England Belarus minute by minute. So,
did you, in all sincerity, fall asleep during the game? Because one or two bloggers were asking about some of the 5 minute intervals between posts on your minute by minute.
No, there was just sometimes where there was absolutely nothing to say.
Right.
Like there was a sort of a war of attrition going on in midfield, yeah. And nothing was happening.
Yeah,
and that would explain the gaps. That and just my useless typing.
Right, okay. Well, we'll talk more about that game in a bit. But first off, you mentioned England-Belarus, and of course, Kevin, you were there as England rounded off their qualifying campaign with a victory, etc., etc., etc. But all a bit, as you were saying, we've got a bit blasé about all these 3-0 wins.
We've become quite tetchy with Capello now. No, they've won 3-0 again, and it was rubbish, you know, and so on. That's 34 goals they scored in the group. Who cares?
What was so rubbish about this 3-0 win?
I mean, I'm parodying it. Maybe we are being overcritical, but I think, for example, the wingers were hugely disappointing, Lennon and Sean Wright-Phillips. I can see why he might play a right-footed Sean Wright-Phillips in the left, because, I mean, if he plays way out left, you've got huge gaps in midfield, so maybe that's why he's playing there, but it didn't really work.
So he played Wright-Phillips on the left?
Yeah, but I mean, naturally...
Where did he play Agbong Lahore? On the right?
No, up front, partnering Peter Crouch. Kind of a 4-4-2. I mean, for traditionalists, it was quite touching to see. Although, it's funny, it did seem totally outdated, that formation. You thought, blimey. I know Chelsea play it, but it did seem a novelty nowadays, and I don't think he'll do it again. He says he wants to practice different formations for the World Cup, but I think one that leaves him outnumbered in midfield will not be in favour come the tournament.
Barry?
No, I was just going to say, it seems a bit miserable to, you know, or bah humbug to criticise England because they've won 9 games out of 10. The only game they lost was a dead rubber after they qualified, and they've scored more goals than any other team in Europe in the process of qualifying.
In history, probably.
And yet, they still managed to look quite unimpressive. Last night, they gave the ball away far too much. Belarus retained possession much better than England did. The best move of the game was a Belarus move, which would have been a marvellous goal if they'd scored, but they didn't. We're going to get criticised for criticising England, but I have to say that on the evidence of what I've seen, their qualifying campaign, that no chance of winning the World Cup.
You'd have Spain and Brazil, you know, head and shoulders by everyone else, but England are in that shadowy second group with the likes of France and Argentina if they get decent managers. The teams that could win it, given a favourable draw and a good win.
What makes you think that France and Argentina aren't going with exactly the same managers they've got right now?
Well, I think if they do go with the same managers, they won't get anywhere. You know, there aren't that many great teams around in world football at the moment. And, you know, in England, you can't knock their record.
I agree that on the day they could probably beat anyone, but they just give the ball away far too much, and you're not going to win a World Cup if you can't keep the ball.
Can I say in the positive note, I thought Gareth Barry was terrific last night, and you thought, what a contrast with Carrick, who made no impression at all at the weekend. He really has got better and better each year, Barry, hasn't he?
What we're looking for last night, I think, were players that could push through, could challenge a starting 11. I think Barry perhaps cemented his place. I know there are people that talk about Owen Hargreaves, but he's had so many injury problems, he's hard to judge when he'll be back. But the only other player I think that really played well was Beckham when he came. And I know it's ridiculous that he got nominated man of the match. And it was even more ridiculous that he had those stupid sideburns, which I can only assume is a tribute to sort of...
Well, it was a full Wolverine.
Wolverine. It was
a full Grizzly Adams. It wasn't a Wolverine. Like, he had hair on his chinny chin chin as well.
But I love the Capello comment about him, though. It's like giving Obama the Nobel Prize. That's really good. Giving Beckham the Man of the Match award.
Well, I don't think it was ridiculous. Who else would you have given it to?
Barry. I mean, Barry played, you know, Beckham's in the pitch for half an hour. It wasn't that brilliant.
But before he came on, the match was very stale, just monotonously boring. And when he came on, people got their value for money at last.
There you go. Anyway, moving on from England-Belarus, in other European qualifying news, Switzerland and Slovakia grabbed the last two qualifying spots. Portugal, Greece, Slovenia, Ukraine are in the playoffs. Ukraine with an absolutely huge win in Andorra. Slovenia and Slovakia, well done to them, eh? Slovenia, population of 2 million, and they could be in the World Cup.
They could be, but Slovakia are there.
Yeah.
They beat Poland last night. I was watching it on internet telly. There was a snowstorm. You could hardly see anything. There were barely any fans there.
Probably there wasn't. It was just there was a real snowstorm?
There was a real snowstorm. It might have been the grainy reception, but the Polish FA... and their fans have been arguing because the fans think the Polish FA are corrupt. The Polish FA responded by calling... There was a boycott of the game last night. They called the boycott hooligans terrorists who want to upset the natural order.
Right.
Which sounds vaguely kind of thing a right-wing person would say about gays and lesbians and everything else.
Right on, Sean. Well, there you go. Well, congratulations to Slovakia, as we say, in the... World Cup for the first time. The playoffs, the draws on Monday. Seeded teams France, Greece, Portugal, Russia, as far as we can tell. Unseeded Bosnia, Ireland, Slovenia and Ukraine. Now, the big excitement midweek, of course, was meanwhile over in South America, the qualifier between Uruguay and Argentina. Barry Glendinning, as we say, doing the minute by minute. His thoughts on the game in a second. First, though, live from Montevideo Airport, Marcela Moro Araujo. Marcela, excitement after the game. Diego, telling everyone to take it up the bottom.
Oh. That's my translation.
All right.
No debate. No, yes.
Through Marcela Moro Araujo is a quotation from Diego's post-match celebration, having almost taken Argentina out of World Cup qualifying. He scraped through in the final game against Uruguay, and that's how he summed up his feelings on the matter.
Summing up his feelings on the matter, I think it was a insult and lashing out at the press. And he said, before I take any questions, I would just like to say, you lot take it up the arse. And it was just quite shocking and stunning, really.
And Marcelo, he also then added, if the ladies will pardon the expression, were you the only lady in the room and did you feel pardoned after he said that?
No. There were a lot of women in the room. I don't think... I think it's still that kind of old-fashioned, you know, you can swear, be absolutely grotesque, and then kind of apologise to the women as if...
Because they don't have to take it up the arse. That's the message.
I guess we were, yes, excused.
Right.
Or, I mean, the real expression he used is, you've still got it stuck up there. So it's really gross. He also then singled out a particular journalist who had a couple of okay questions. One was, you know, I mean, just really standard questions. And before the guy could even open his mouth, he said he was live on TV. Maradona said, "Oh, and you have particularly have still got it stuck up there," which is just such a kind of overt bullying and picking of an individual. I mean, it was really nasty, as well as having this kind of dubious, funny side. And I think it's an interesting release from a guy, because you'd have thought that he'd be happy. You know, this is a good occasion. Argentina were in danger. Suddenly the place was safe. A lot of critics will have to kind of, you know, maybe say, oh, well, he might know what he's doing, or luckily we got through anyway. But it was very... to me, interesting that his first wish was to just say, you know, all of you people who hate me and I hate you back, and to be vitriolic. And that was slightly disturbing. And now this morning, you just hear everyone, you know, Montevideo's quite small and the airport's quite small, and a lot of people are coming from the game and a lot of Argentinian journalists. And there's just this kind of ongoing gag about everybody taking it up the arse, bouncing around the airport. And it's kind of going to become, you know, a new term for something. This is just ludicrous. It's
but Marcella, should we be surprised at this? Because we've read his autobiography, which shows that he's paranoid, he's slightly delusional. He also has a history of drug dependency. It's basically like having Gazza in charge of the England team and then stepping back and seeing what happens.
Argentina got the win. Are they looking like a team now? And is it going to be Maradona in charge in South Africa?
Well, imagine it, the way that his appointment in the first place is still a complete mystery. It's anyone's guess as to whether it will last. There's no reason now to think it will end.
Well, he said that he would walk if he didn't get what he wanted.
Well, he said a few days ago, we have to see if I'll still be here after Uruguay. And then he said, I never said I'd quit. You're all lying bastards. How dare you make that up? And you know, so who knows? But I think, actually, there is talk that if he walks, then that's one thing. But in order to sack him, the contract would have to pay him quite a lot of compensation. And so that might be a consideration. Worryingly, I think he might not leave.
Okay, excellent. Marcella, listen, best of luck. Many happy trails on your way to South Africa. And thank you for giving us that report from Montevideo Airport.
Thank you.
Right, well, that was Marcella Moreira-Rajo with her own unique take on things. Barry, you were here at this end.
Yes.
Yes. Argentina, looking like a team again? That the bookies are quite hot on them.
Well, the bookies were quite hot on them before the game.
Yeah.
But I think they were 9-1 to win the World Cup, which only an absolute madman would have taken that on the evidence of recent performances. But last night, they did actually resemble a fairly well-organised team. But having said that, Uruguay made it very easy for them, apart from at the start where they pressed and harried and tried to, you know, force the Argentina defence to make mistakes. And they did make mistakes. But then once they settled down, they were quite well organised. Uruguay posed very little threat, had very few chances, and the game kind of ended as a contest once word came from Santiago that Chile had gone a goal up against Ecuador, which meant both teams were probably going to be okay, barring an absolute miracle. So I think Uruguay looked quite disappointed at the end to only be in the playoffs, but they did nothing to merit anything else.
Well, they're going to be playing Costa Rica, who will be entering the playoffs from the, what's that group called? Central American?
North Central American.
All right.
But one thing, at the end of the game, Maradona was ecstatic and he was surrounded by journalists and cameramen and photographers and a couple of fans and whatnot. But there's talk that him and his technical advisor,
Carlos Pilado,
don't get on.
But they hugged each other.
Oh, they were beside themselves with ecstasy last night and hugging and, you know.
Either that or they were grappling. Maybe they were grappling.
Trying to figure out who'd be taking it.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Well, it was, of course, an emotional moment for everybody. And well done to Bilardo if he managed to get close enough to hug Diego. But, sorry, you were going to make a point.
It was quite a disappointing game. It was a very boring game and not at all entertaining, which seems to be the way with a lot of, you know, games that we look forward to with huge amount of anticipation. It ended up being a very damp squib.
Mm. All right, well then, we mentioned Costa Rica coming into the playoffs from the CONCACAF. Well done to Honduras, who from that group joined USA and Mexico at South Africa. Nerdy posting in saying, mention must go to the fantastic Chile under a quality coach in Bielsa, Argentine, of course, who's created a great ethic in the team, playing some wonderful free-flowing attacking football. The squad itself is in the midst of its best generation of players for over a decade, all of whom are young, are playing at a good level in Europe. Vidal, Sanchez, Mati Fernandez and Medel, to name but a few. Potential dark horses? I think so, says Nerdy. Well, there you go. That is the World Cup qualifiers. Of course, there are playoffs to come, 14th and 18th of November. So we're all awaiting those with bated breath. In the meantime, though, Premier League time. The Premier League is back and we'll be looking at the big fixtures coming up this weekend right after this.
Football Weekly Extra on guardian.co.uk.
Sean, big fixture list this weekend. Some very interesting matchups there. What catches your expert eye?
Well, there are quite a few, I think. I mean, I think Sunderland-Liverpool is the obvious one. It's a start of a huge week for Liverpool. They play Sunderland on Saturday, then they play Lyon at home, then they play Manchester United away. They're coming off the back of two defeats. They go to Sunderland with Mascherano and Lucas having to make a long journey back with doubts over Steven Gerrard, who only played 10 minutes training rather in England on Tuesday, and Fernando Torres also a slight doubt, although he was on the bench for Spain, Bosnia Herzegovina. So
was Gerrard, is that a real genuine injury then? Is there
well,
a risk he might
two
not
different
play?
Things, don't you? Liverpool seem to think it is, but England were quite dismissive and said he'll be fine for Saturday.
I think more recently it's been people sort of saying he is okay. I mean, he didn't even do much at training. He jogged about a bit, then stopped and pulled out before he did any harm on Monday. And I don't know. I think he is fit. Or will be fit. Isn't it interesting playing Lyon, by the way? You look at Lyon's squad and think, this is actually quite a strong team. And sometimes get to last 16 but never make an impact. But this time, surely they may have a chance of preventing Liverpool from advancing in that group.
Well, in the meantime, Liverpool dropped down to sixth place in the Premier League. Facing Sunderland, how are Sunderland? They're in quite good form.
They are in good form. They were very unlucky not to beat Manchester United in their last game. Conceding a late equaliser, and Darren Bent has, of course, had a week to rest because he wasn't selected for England, which some think was lunacy. I would definitely have him in the squad ahead of Carrick and Cole, but then I'm biased. And Bent settled in really well in Sunderland. You can follow all his movements on Twitter. He's quite a regular Twitterer, but there's every chance he'll score because he's averaging a goal a game. He's linked up well with Kevin Jones. I had a feeling Sunderland would get a result against Manchester United. I have a feeling they won't against Liverpool.
Darren Bent, by the way, I gather he didn't go to Wembley last night as one of the people who'd been part of Capello's squads in the past. And apparently that's allowable, but I suspect if you really wanted to ingratiate yourself and you believed you're going to be part of the England squad, you would have gone last night to the match.
Now, going to the match, you will be at Villa Park this weekend. Aston Villa against Chelsea.
Yeah, they've become a kind of litmus test. Villa was there for the Man City game, where Man City were quite pleased with themselves at the end to get a draw out of it after Richard Dunn scored the opener. And Dunn, incidentally, looking, I know he has the odd very bad game, but looking quite a shrewd signing in terms of replacing Martin Larsson at Aston Villa, which is a huge loss to them over the course of latter part of last season.
And scored, of course.
He scored. I mean, somewhat predictably, that's what always happens in these games, isn't it? but players have a sort of sting in them. But City were pleased to have got a draw, but I suspect Chelsea will feel they can get more than that out of it.
They've struggled a bit, though, if memory serves. I think they've only scored two goals in the last five games. I know they won last year, but at Villa Park. So they haven't had a great record there in recent years.
They've only won once in the last 10 years, Sean. Your memory does not fail you. Remarkable. Now, also coming up this weekend is Harry Redknapp's triumphant return to Fratton Park with Portsmouth.
He says he won't let the idiots get him down, quote unquote, which I'm sure is going to go down well with the Pompey faithful. I'm sure he will get an absolute.
This is his first return there since jumping ship.
Pompey have got a decent record against Spurs in recent years. They've won sort of three out of the last six. But
all the players who got that record are now playing for Spurs.
Exactly. Yeah. And Pompey seems to have got a couple of Spurs hand-me-offs, and you know, they've certainly had the worst deal there. There's generally very few goals in this game. I was looking earlier that only 10 goals have been scored in the last six Premier League games. So it wouldn't surprise me at all though if Pompey perhaps get something, because you read David James's column last week and speaking to the person that goes to the column, that there is a much more of a positive vibe.
Write himself.
Have I broken some great taboo?
My word! I'm appalled.
James may not play, obviously he was injured midweek, but I think if he does play, Pompey have got a bit more of a team spirit now and they could easily get something, I think, against Spurs.
All right. So I know.
Are you saying that bloke whose knee James is sitting on, who has his hand up James's back, is putting the words in his mouth in this podcast as well?
My word. Arsenal are taking on Birmingham. Ooh, Arsenal have scored 24 goals in 7 games, which is it's either their Premier League record or it is an overall Premier League record. An overall, I'm getting the nod from producer Pete on that one, it is an overall Premier League record.
You would imagine, Birmingham have got a pretty poor record at Highbury, at the Emirates. Yeah. I think they've only scored one goal in the last five meetings there. when they play away at Arsenal, and I think they'll probably try and park the bus, but Arsenal will beat them.
It must be extraordinarily frustrating being an Arsenal fan. They're just fantastic talent in the squad, yet you feel that they themselves will be picked off by better teams because they don't have much defensive cover in midfield and so on. Yet, when you have so much ability, you think, why can't they buy one or two players more and get the balance right?
Is it naive of me to think that a team like Birmingham should go to a place like the Emirates and just have a go? And, you know, you might as well lose 7-0 as 1-0. Or because there's not a realistic chance of them.
Sort of did that last time out, and they scored a couple of early-ish goals and ended up being,
why not? Yeah, in a blaze of glory.
But then Birmingham have drawn two of the five games they've played against Arsenal away, so they could argue that that's 2 points. You know, they'd just gone out there. Fair point.
Man United, meanwhile, who are 2 points behind Chelsea at the top of the table, are home to Bolton. They've won the last six at home against Bolton, and you'd figure they might add another one to that list. And then, of course, there's the Cotton Mill Derby between two of the founder members of the Football League, Blackburn Rovers and Burnley.
We really should have some Hovis music to play over this bit. Men in flat caps and pipes and whippets and whatnot.
A huge game, this one, Barry.
It is going to be a huge game, and the stadium, Ewood Park, will be rocking, you'd imagine. And I expect Blackburn to win because Burnley are not good away from home.
Well, they've won all their home games and lost all their away games. Is that right?
That's absolutely right.
Yeah. Interesting. Looking forward to that one. Excellent. That's the Premier League then this weekend.
Jimbo, you were talking about we were talking about Twitter earlier.
Oh yeah,
Darren Brent. There's been a few tweets asking why aren't you tweeting, having set up an AC Jimbo account?
Yeah.
Why? Any? Do you want to tell the masses the great unwashed?
Well, I'm
in 140 characters or less.
Yeah, please. That's the thing. Really, I don't like that kind of.
You could have a pun of the day.
I could have a pun of the day, but that would involve actually having to kind of scratch my head and stuff. No, I'm lucky enough to have a forum with which to address, you know, my friends out there around the world every twice a week in podcast things, Football Weekly.
But lacks the intimacy, though, doesn't it?
Of a tweet. What's intimate about a tweet?
Well, you know, you can ask for something and you immediately can get 20 or 30 responses back.
I just don't want to disturb anybody with the kind of...
There are some people out there who have a real Twitter problem. I don't know if you know Peter Serafinowicz, the actor. He tweets about 5 million times a day. He asks people to send in words or topics, and then he makes up jokes about them with varying degrees of success. He gets, I'd say, about 1 in 10 is an absolute zinger.
Right.
And then a few others fall.
But so do you tweet, Barry? You have an account?
I'm quite an infrequent tweeter. I sort of read other people's. There's this cabal of London media folk who sort of tweet each other all the time. I don't know how they ever get any work done, but I sort of read theirs to see what's going on. I'm not part of this cabal, I hate to add. But
who would be in this cabal?
Simon Pegg, Graham Linehan, Serafinowicz, Andrew Collins, the film critic and journalist, and a few other guys like that. Right. It's as if they all live together in a big house and they're just passing each other. Does it sound like I'm envious of them?
You want to be in that gang.
Yeah, I want to be in that gang.
It's like the cool group at school.
And like in school, I'm not in it.
Or even football writers a tweet. You think, isn't it bad enough that we write match reports and columns about inflicting tweets on the world as well?
Henry Winter is always tweeting. He was saying how great it was last night that the Wembley crowd applauded the armed services, so the armed services would appreciate what the country thinks of them.
Really?
And stuff like that.
It's a very telegraphed comment, though, isn't it? It's just staying in character.
So apologies to anyone who is following my tweets. And I have to say there are quite a few of them. The longer I go on not tweeting, the more it's going to take something really special for me to break silence.
You could do it, Jimbo. Go on, promise to do something.
Everyone's life is probably rich enough without little nuggets from me. Now, that's it for part two, is it? Yes, it is, says producer Pete. And in part three, all sorts of exciting international talk, including the return of Dr. Sid in Madrid.
Hello.
Ah, no, Sid.
Hello.
Hello. Who were you expecting?
I was expecting a call from someone. Maybe it was you.
Right. Okay. You are an enigma. Now,
wrapped inside a riddle, wrapped inside of whatever the other thing was.
Exactly so. Now, first off, Turnpole says, any news on Dr. Sid Lowe? Did he pack his hard hat on his day trip to the seaside last weekend, the Asturian Derby, for anyone who missed that one, in which the great Real Oviedo lost 1-0 to the B side of Sporting Gijón.
Yeah, and the key word there is B, isn't it? It was great occasion in terms of, you know, Spanish at that level at Second Division B. You don't normally get 11,000 inside a stadium. Sporting Gijón's B team would normally play at their training ground at Mareo, but instead played at Molinón to play against Oviedo. And Oviedo took 500 fans, a bit more than that, actually, about 600 or 700 fans who were marched to the stadium along the beachfront. Some of them in workers' helmets. I didn't see very many. Quite a few were wearing those kind of funny face mask things that people wore when the SARS outbreak happened not long ago, which is obviously was a dig at Gijón rather than a way of protecting themselves or protecting their mouths. But I went incognito, so I wasn't wearing a workers' helmet.
Turnpole also recommends your review of Spanish football at 7 o'clock on Fridays on Sky Channel 446. So there you go, Sid fans.
That's very kind of him. Yeah,
You'll have plenty to preview this weekend. But before we talk about that, Spain, I notice, make it 10 wins out of 10. Going to Bosnia, the very highly rated Bosnia-Herzegovina, and winning 5-2 there, hey, despite making all sorts of changes to the lineup. Tell us about it, Sid.
Well, the first thing to say is that 5-2 kind of flatters Bosnia a little bit. Bear in mind that their goals came in, unless I'm much mistaken, the 91st and 93rd minute. Mm. Scored two goals right near the end and kind of made it look a little bit better than it was. Spain, you know, it's almost become boring how brilliant they are, because every game they seem to stroll for it. They seemed last night just to be kind of walking around the pitch, but walking around the pitch with the ball under control all the way through. And I think the thing that's probably most striking about Spain, apart from the stats, which of course are phenomenal, I think they've conceded 5 goals in the entire qualifying campaign, 2 of which, as I say, last night in the additional time of the last game when they sent a whole load of players home during midweek. A couple of had picked up suspensions, a couple of were injured, which, by the way, caused a bit of an outcry in Spain. And the thing is that they keep doing this, and their 10 out of 10 has never been matched by anyone before. No one's won 10 games out of 10 in qualifying before. Yes, teams have won all their games, but not in a 10-game group. And Spain just keep on winning. But the thing that's really striking about this is that Vicente del Bosque puts new players in. He tries new things, and it works every single time. Juan Mata, who came in from the Valencia side, has now scored in 3 consecutive games. You had Alvaro Negredo, who came in last night, played just his second game for Spain. I think he played a little bit in the previous game. Scored twice and created one with a really wonderful pass. He's obviously currently at Seville, but with a buyback clause for Real Madrid. So everything Del Bosque tries is going right now. They're playing wonderful football. They're in complete control every match. That's the thing that's so striking about it. And I think you have to look at them and say that they're certainly going to be amongst the 2 or 3 sides who can genuinely win the World Cup.
Okay, now, coming back to the league, which starts up again this weekend with round 7, Barcelona currently leading Real Madrid by 3 points. Sevilla tied with Real Madrid there. On 15 points. And you've got Valencia, who are hosting Barcelona this weekend down in 5th place. Does that represent a potential, dare I say, banana skin for Barcelona? And what truth is there, Sid, in these rumours of a Robinho move to Catalonia?
Well, if I had to put my money on it right now, I'd say Robinho will end up at Barcelona, if not during the Christmas break, then next summer.
Ooh, why?
I think it's very likely indeed. I think, well, because the question mark for me really is what Manchester City's attitude is, and I'm sure you lot will be able to tell me better this than I can tell you, but my feeling is that Manchester City are not entirely enamoured with him. They're not entirely pleased with his performances, which are alternating between very, very good and really, very poor. Pep Guardiola really likes him, and Guardiola thinks that he fits on the left-hand side of a front three, which at the moment Barcelona look at a little bit weak there. Pedrito's played this season and played very well, but Thierry Henry isn't really doing it. I mean, he had a very good season last year, but it's not quite happened just yet. There is a feeling that there's a gap there for Barcelona, that Robinho would fit that gap. He, of course, would love to play at Barcelona. And there's some very interesting comments from him today, basically saying that the only time he's been able to play at Barcelona before is on the PlayStation, and he'd love to be able to play there for real with some of the players they've got. And I think that Barcelona are prepared to push the boat out a little bit to get him. The question mark for me is, to what extent can they come to an agreement with Manchester City in terms of the valuation of Robinho, and in terms of whether Manchester City are prepared to let him go? As I say, if I was a betting man, which I know Sean Ingle is, I'd say he'll end up at Barcelona.
Magnificent stuff, Sid. All right, well, we look forward to hearing your reviews of all that, both on Friday and 7 p.m. on Sky Channel 446, and perhaps in Monday's pod.
Yeah, hopefully.
Yeah, nice one. Where will you be off to, just out of interest?
this weekend?
This weekend I'll actually be in Barcelona covering some games on Saturday, but not actually at games, which is a terrible tragedy. I'll be inside a tiny, tiny little studio instead.
Doing what for whom?
Doing what for whom? There's a,
we know what Jimbo's aiming for here, don't we?
You're making him jealous.
I'll put a word in for you, Jimbo.
Seriously.
For the same company, which is two different companies, one which is doing Spanish games for an international audience, and the other which is doing English games for a Spanish audience. So probably a little bit of England and a little bit of Spain.
You know, there are low cost flights from London to Barcelona, aren't there, Jimbo?
There's lots of them as well.
Interesting. Okay, thanks for that, then, Sean Ingle. Thanks, Sid. We'll speak to you on Monday.
My pleasure, speak to you.
My pleasure, Sid. Mine. Now, let's see, posts. Ooh, Capo Cannon says, forget about developing nuclear weapons. Hiring Sven for a few months will surely bankrupt North Korea. This story, though, apparently not destined. It doesn't have legs.
Well, a week ago, or I think it was when it was announced you and Sven were doing that internet broadcast, yeah. I asked you, is there anything that man will not do for money?
Yes.
Now, apparently there is. We know what it is. He won't work for the dear leader. Dear leader of North Korea.
Well, I might, you know, if the next thing goes. But no, Sven, no. So there you go. That's a shame, because what an extraordinary story that would be. What a tale that would be to tell. Okay, other posts. Standard Ledge says, has anyone mentioned the little bust-up between Shea Given and Giovanni Trapattoni in the Ireland-Italy game on Saturday? I saw it all happen right in front of me, says Standard Ledge, who was sitting front row centre. He says that Given gave Trapp the fingers after the two were arguing over whether St. Ledger should go forward for the corner or not. Trapattoni turned around to the crowd with his fingers in his ears and cursing as St. Ledger ran forward to bang in Ireland's second goal. While the rest of the team were celebrating, Given stood on the halfway line staring at Trapattoni. Does the goalkeeper have too much power in the squad, considering his role in the exit of Dean Keighley from the team and his reported forcefulness in playing in every match? Has he become a disruptive influence? Barry, have you heard this story?
No,
I've not seen any reference to it anywhere at all.
It's completely common news to me.
It's another Football Weekly Extra exclusive. Many thanks for that, Standard Ledge. Is Shea Given a bit of a handful?
I don't know. He comes across as quite a mild-mannered bloke. No. I've never met him. No. He got his 100th cap last night. Mm-hmm. An achievement which was possibly tarnished by the fact that Kevin Kilbane also got his 100th cap last night. But fair play to both of them. They've both been great servants to Ireland. And I'd say if Given is a bit of a disruptive influence, he's probably entitled to be, because he's one of the best goalkeepers in the world.
Yeah, he's worth it. Harvey Birdman, it being an internationals week, can you mention the FIFA Under-20s finals currently taking place in Egypt, where, of course, on Friday, Ghana will be playing Brazil in the final with, do you remember Abdi Pelé? His son's in the Ghana team.
Cracking goal against England. I was watching it on Eurosport a couple of weeks ago. And
who?
Pelé's...
Should be a cracking game that on Friday.
I noticed actually the other night that Chris Hughton's son is playing fullback for the Ireland Under-21s, Keane Hughton, yeah.
As in...
C-I-A-N, imagine.
Right, okay.
It's an good Irish name.
Right. Now, just to finish off today, latest from Italy. They had a very exciting international, their final qualifier on Wednesday night in Parma. They were at home to Cyprus, and Lippi has been under pressure to finally bring in some new blood into the Italy side. Did that, dropped most of the old World Cup winning lot, and... The new crowd didn't do very well. They were 2-0 down to Cyprus. And it was only when he then brought on some of the old guard that things turned around. And three goals, or two and a half, in 14 minutes from Alberto Gilardino saw Italy roar back and take the victory, 3-2. And the crowd had been booing and whistling at half-time and shouting, Cassano, Cassano, in honour of Antonio Cassano, who everybody once called up for the national side, ended up applauding, but that wasn't enough for Lippi. He was furious. Furious like a beast, as he said afterwards. These people should be ashamed of themselves. They should learn to love this team more. Kevin, were you...
smiling because of Cassano. I was reading his thing about him the other day, about him and Capello, but at Real Madrid. Yeah, Cassano. It sounds a bit... back to Gascoigne, a bit of a Gaza figure in some ways.
But he's got his head together.
Yeah, but
he's settled down.
I mean, it's been said before, but it just made me laugh. He said to Capello, if I score a goal, can I break the corner flag in my celebration?
And what did Capello say?
And Capello said, if you score two and we win, you can break all four corner flags.
That's an eminently pragmatic response from Capello. Now, Giladino, fantastic stuff there then. Ian Caution McCord, something like that. Question for AC Jimbo, should Giladino now be an automatic starter for Italy? Well, given that it's either him or Iaquinta, apparently, in Lippi's brain, I would vote Gila myself. Now, moving on to the weekend's fixtures, huge game coming up for Alberto Giladino and his Fiorentina side. They're currently tied with Juventus in the top four at a level on points. They're both on 14 points, two behind the leaders, Inter Milan and Sampdoria. And they're facing each other, Juve and Fiorentina, this weekend in Turin, one of the big grudge games for reasons that we've gone into in the past, this clash of the Turin giants and the top team in Tuscany. And Juve coming to this in not the best of states because they've only won one. Well, actually, they haven't won a game in four matches, actually. They're a bit of a dip in form, but part of that was because Diego was out injured. He's now back. Injury worries, though, for Gigi Buffon, worryingly enough, who after the Ireland game revealed that he's got a damaged meniscus and needs an operation. Thomas Kelly tweeting in about this.
Damaged meniscus makes it sound like one of the plants in his garden needs yeah. some extra nutrition or something.
No, it's quite a vital component of your knee. All right. But Gigi says he's going to hang on till the winter break. The plan is, apparently, if he can make it that far, he can play in the game against Inter, which is a huge one for Juve. And then the Italians have a bit of a winter break, so he would be able to have the operation and only miss two or three Serie A games. But in the meantime, he should be on the field for Juve in this match against Fiorentina on Saturday. Also big games in Italy this weekend. You've got Milan-Roma, which could or could not be another nail in Leonardo's coffin on the Milan bench. They've only won three games in Serie A. They got beaten by Zurich, of course, and apparently there was a big conference in the Milan locker room where they said, let's have a 4-4-2 again, Leo. So that's going to make all the difference, I'm sure. Roma, by the way, are doing brilliantly under Ranieri. They're unbeaten in the league under him. Who replaced Luciano Spalletti. So well done there, although there's some doubt of whether Francesco Totti will be recovering from a knee injury. Just to take things full circle, Barry, we mentioned the call for Antonio Cassano to come back into the Italy side and inject a bit of quality. It seems that Lippi's inclination is not to call up the Barresi genius, but instead to go with Francesco Totti, a hot young prospect who he's discovered, who apparently could well inject the necessary quality and creativity there in an attacking midfield role.
Would it be wise for him to take a risk with such a raw and untried right. and untested
Well,
talent?
That's always the gamble. I personally have the impression that Totti will be crooked by the end of the season anyway, so the point will be moot. Lazio, meanwhile, are hosting.
Do you know something he doesn't?
No, I've just seen how things pan out. I mean, he's fit at the moment, and I can't. Experience suggests that won't be the case for that much longer. Although it'd be lovely if it was. Anyway, there you go. I think that brings to an end this week's adventures in football land. So do join us after the weekend and we'll be looking back on the whole thing. In the meantime, many, many thanks to Sean Ingle, Kevin McCarra and Barry Glendenning and producer Pete. And we look forward to seeing you on Monday. Enjoy your weekend.
Football Weekly Extra from The Guardian in association with sportingbet.com.